Hey everyone, welcome back to JLXP. The summer split regular season is over. We only had one tiebreaker game, which is far fewer than we expected at the start of the day. I thought Emily and I were going to be doing this much later in the day, even though it is 8:40 at the moment. But yeah, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say the Golden Guardians dig game had me worried.
Yes.
Because anyone who watched the broadcast on Friday knows one of the scenarios I actually previewed was the scenario that we did almost get in regards to having Dig still be able to make playoffs by forcing the three-way tie between them, Golden Guardians, and Immortals.
Yeah, and let me just say, I hope we slightly change the playoff system for next year. I think the possibility of a three-way tie for eighth of like a playoff spot of the three teams that are on massive losing streaks, and we could have had a three-way tie at 4-14. Like, there's something there that is just fundamentally wrong to me when we're calling that a playoff team, and we also have a 15-3 EG that is also a playoff team. So, something's off.
I was gonna say, I don't know how much you want to get into format. I think I like that ours indexes into summer because essentially, like, I get that the thought process is we have eight teams because this is the championship. It's not correct. Just playoffs. So this qualifies our teams for Worlds. But, and I've argued this with other people, I actually don't like how it completely throws out spring. I don't think in any way spring should be weighted equally with summer. I think summer should actually always be weighted more. But I do like the idea that your spring performance does count for something. Like, I think LPL, I don't think we should do LPL format because obviously they have 17 teams and their bracket is freaking massive. And it starts next week and it goes for like 3 weeks. Or no, longer than that. It's just an insane amount of games.
It's a number of games.
And then they have a regional qualifier on top of that. But I do like the idea that number one in spring auto qualifies. Number two typically qualifies on points just because the amount of points you get for second place in summer is still so high that it's really difficult to not auto qualify off of that. And then the third and fourth teams are decided by a regional bracket.
Right.
I like the little regional bracket thing because, like, I know people say, and again, like, sorry, this is a massive tangent before we even start.
Okay.
But like,
that's why I put the little things in the video. If you want to skip to the first team discussion,
you can skip over to our retrospective later and go away from Emily rants about playoff formats. But I like the idea that there's a little regional, like, almost second chance qualifier. And I actually think it still makes it more hype because the argument against it is always like, well, that's anti-hype because it comes after finals. And it's like, well, I think finals is always going to be hype. And you already know your three Worlds teams before you're qualifying for finals. So you could also make the argument that that is kind of anti-hype. I don't necessarily think it is, but I don't think it takes away from the kind of drama of a regional qualifier if you don't already know like your three Worlds teams. Because the three teams that make it to Chicago are going to be our three Worlds teams. And we'll already know that, just like we knew it for Houston in spring. We knew that one of those three teams was going to be qualifying to MSI.
You took it the different direction around Worlds teams. I was going to go around the 7 and 8 and calling them playoff teams. I would just call them play-in teams.
I would make it I didn't even think about that. So make it like a play-in.
Yeah, mine is kind of somewhat similar to the NBA play-in where they've managed to get 10 teams in their playoffs without actually letting 10 teams into their playoffs. And you'd play those games first. So rather than starting the loser's bracket, like those loser's bracket teams, TSM and Golden Guardians are going to be sitting around for 2 weeks before we see them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would like basically maybe even tomorrow, like as quickly as possible, have them do, I don't want to do a full NBA format. I would actually just take 6, 7, and 8 and I would have 7 play 8, winner then play 6 in best of 3s. And that's how you get your top 6. So like,
and do like a little gauntlet. Yeah, so yeah, you still okay. have something like to kind
of play for at the end of the year, but you're not saying like eight qualifies for playoffs. It's like, no, eight stays alive. And then if they go on a big fatty run, then they have the right to play a real playoff series. But I don't want to give them these big playoff series for going 4-14. Hell no.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was just going to say cut out the 7-8 entirely yeah. and go back to like a championship point regional qualifier. Mm-hmm. So like if you do have a massive outlier where like C9 in 2015, for example, had a horrendous regular season, but then made this like really miraculous regional qualifier run that was like super dramatic and interesting with High and the Jungle position. Like that's still a story people remember to this day.
Yeah.
And it's because they still had enough leftover championship points from spring.
True.
Because they'd True. Done so well back then.
Yeah. And then we have the EU system, which factors in championship points for playoff seeding, but you still have to be a top six team in summer to make it. I checked on this earlier because you and I were talking about this before the day. The championship yeah. points ended up actually not making that much of a difference. So like their summer playoffs, the only two teams that have a different summer standing than what their championship points add up to are Rogue and Mad Lions. And Rogue yeah. was second in summer, but third in champ points. And Rogue is the opposite, 3-2. Everyone else actually matched it perfectly. So it ended up not doing really crazy things, even though it had the potential to do really crazy things had their week not ended the way it did. They had some wild tiebreakers as well. But, oh,
yeah,
you looked excited.
About I was going to say the big thing would have been if the thing you and I were talking about was actually yeah. if Fnatic don't make it, they're spring points just evaporate. Like yes. they disappear into the ether.
Even though they
could have won. Which is also very weird.
They could have won like 9 games, which is like kind of a respectable summer, just a little bit off and then not made it. But
yeah.
Much like when Fnatic nearly didn't qualify for the EU LCS in 2013, people just forget that there was this really shaky thing that almost ended them. But they're good now. They made it to the LCS. They won several titles and we're finally going to start the episode for real now. So,
yeah,
EG, the best split in their history. Rather than doing a playoff preview, I think we can kind of take this episode to go through a little bit of what our expectations were for the teams coming into the split and how they delivered on some of those expectations. So EG is one who, even though they did win spring, they were an 8-8 team in spring, and we were just looking back at this. They actually lost the first round of the playoffs to Team Liquid 3-2. Yep. The only team to take a game off them in the loser's bracket ended up being FlyQuest before they then swept 3 series in a row against C9, TL, and then 100 Thieves towards the title. So this crazy run. But we're like, I wonder how they're going to sustain this. And then to go 15-3 is just actually super impressive with the MSI hangover and everything. Couple extra stats I had written down here, which have actually disappeared on me temporarily. Got them.
Uh-oh.
Danny has his third split in the row of leading the LCS in kills. FBI is second. It was actually pretty close. A career high in DPM, 786 DPM. He was 588 in spring. And it's not like DPM was mega inflated this split. The next closest AD carry was FBI at 610. So like Danny was way above everyone in DPM in third split in a row with kills. Inspired kind of goes without saying. I think he's going to be the MVP. But what are some of your takeaways from EG so far in the summer split?
I was going to say my fun wonky stat is that Inspired jumped up to being tied for third with most solo kills at 6.
Yeah, let's see. Four today.
What
in a game?
Yeah, Whippo, Philip, and him, and then Gamsu as well had six solo kills. Wow.
Oh, he had that game where he was on Shyvana and he just kept solo killing.
I think it was Impact.
So okay. The solo kill stat's so weird because you want to use it as this big. Yeah. Like hold it up and they're like, well, actually no, he just 1v3, so like, that counts for
this
three.
Kinda, yeah, that's hilarious. The thing that's super impressive to me about EG was I know a lot of people have ragged on their MSI performance just because of the G2 record. I actually thought they didn't collapse, right? Mm-hmm. They did a respectable enough job, even in the RNG series where they were just very visibly outclassed by a better team. They hung in there. They had some good team fights. I was like, okay, like that's good. And then you never know, because talking to North American teams when they go abroad, it's always like, we need to somehow encapsulate what we learned and sustain it. And the sustaining it is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's most impressive about EG is that even when they were looking not as good as we know they can be, they were still very strong. They were still very cohesive, which is the most important thing. And talking to the players about what they were working on, like, you know, Inspired had talked about having better jungle to lane communication than mm-hmm. he previously had. JoJo had talked about how he didn't realize that other mid laners did so much for their teams, right? Until he had to face players like Xiaohu, who has just such a phenomenal understanding of when he can drop waves in mid to help side lanes, when he can go to side lanes, when he's going to meet up with Wei or Ming on like routine rotations to kind of try to catch people out. And he, you could tell that he was working on this theoretically, because I know I keep going to back to this game. I feel like I've talked about it here. I know I've talked about it on broadcast. I keep going back to that one game 5 against TL in the upper bracket.
Okay.
Where they pick Nidalee or Nekton, and they look like they're set, you know, Impact setting up the wave, and someone calls it off. Like there are pings to go down. You know they're gonna do this very patented, like, we're stacking the wave, we're gonna dive. Yep. On the earliest timer. And it doesn't happen. For whatever reason, they call it off. And you see JoJo recognize this, and he's like, well, if I can't get anything, like, if we don't do this, if we don't get this Renekton ahead, if we don't get this Nidalee Renekton set up going, our entire team comp falls apart, right? So he does something that ends up looking really stupid, which is he drops, I want to say it ends up being 3 waves mid to go topside to try to make a play on a rotation. And that tells me that theoretically he was already studying what mid laners do out of lane, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean to go to side lanes? When are you supposed to do it? How does it tie into your team composition? And so I'm not going to say like that was a good play, because it wasn't, but I liked what it told me about JoJo the player and mm-hmm. like the team itself, right? Mm-hmm. And that I think is one thing that he has improved on massively in regards to A, how the team kind of moves with him and how he moves with the team. Because we saw him go topside earlier today, and I actually thought C9's early to mid cross map trading in that game was really good, like really smart. But he does get he does get bullied by Jensen. Jensen actually kind of has control over the lane, even with Inspired visiting the lane, kind of trying to make sure that he is not going to end up getting automatically shoved in and losing all pressure, right? It takes a lot of time just to make it be okay. And he goes top for a kill. And the timing of that, even though it wasn't necessarily like, he didn't lose a lot. Like, it just told me, like, oh, okay. It reminded me of that Nidalee Renekton play, even though that was a completely different situation. Sense. And it's like, I can see that you are so much more thoughtful as a player about when to go to side lanes, when you can do it, what it's going to do for you, what it's going to do for your teammates. Like, I don't know who made that call, because this entire team seems very locked in terms of, like, mm-hmm. how they work together, which mm-hmm. is also a strength. But like overall, that is the kind of stuff I still like to see in terms of how are we sustaining what we actually learned and keeping it both in theory and in practice throughout the season. And their consistency over the season and not having to overly rely on like individual outplays, which still does sometimes happen, obviously, because they're all really good players, has been super impressive, because I actually did think they were going to go in and look really, really shaky for the first few weeks.
I thought they were probably going to win 11 or 12 games coming into the split, just because I was I have yet to see an NA team go to MSI and come back stronger. And I knew they were coming off the 9-9, even if they were just the title winners. So I really didn't expect them to play at that level. And I like your point about JoJo, and it's going to make it super interesting when we get to award voting, which both of us are going to be diving into in the next couple days.
Because it's like, so hard.
But specifically for mid lane, like, what has JoJo really done wrong this split? It doesn't seem like much. His stats are very not impressive. But it's judging, like, he sacrifices for his team gives back. You don't want to fall into the trap of, oh, they are 15-3, therefore they are all the best, because you can't distinguish or differentiate who is contributing most to their success. But it is, in many ways, the correct way to play mid lane, and it is, like, it is distinctly different than actually the way Bjergsen is playing mid lane, because Bjergsen's stats are the best. He did die like 4 or 5 times in that final game, which is going to hurt his KDA, which had been so ridiculous. But Bjergsen even was getting solo kills, and Bjergsen was still doing high DPM and team fights, but they played almost in like kind of polar opposite to each other in terms of how much they manage their wave and set up their own wave for their own wave success versus how much they go to try and impact the rest of the map, almost like a second jungler. And EG has definitely been the team that finds more success with this strategy. And yeah, you just kind of, I just kind of have to hand it to them. And I think they should be the clear favorites going into playoffs to repeat as champions. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like they deserve that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Let's go to 100 Thieves, who we were talking right before this podcast, 14-4. It's 2 games better than their best split ever. And it really didn't feel like that based on the conversations we were having, based on a lot of the community sentiment. Maybe I don't go to the 100 Thieves subreddit enough, but like it very much was their best split ever. It's the most consistent that they've been able to play. The amount of time the team has spent together has led to them being much better in clutch situations. Again, today against Team Liquid, I'd even say both of their games against Team Liquid this split, where they were in very, you would say, losable situations, but they just played so much better than Team Liquid in the mid and late game around objectives, around team fights, mainly just in general coordination. And they get the first round bye for it. Like, it is completely well deserved. But I guess, like, kind of mind checking, is this the best 100 Thieves has ever been?
Yeah, it's weird to say, because you would think in your head, like, oh, it has to be the roster, like the year that they won, right?
Yeah.
But most people, I would say, weren't expecting them to win, even though they were performing well, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the big interesting thing to me about 100 Thieves that I saw today or heard from their game today was actually that Huhi admitted that they had misunderstood the matchup.
That was cool.
And thought they would have push. And like, props to Jay for admitting this, but like, he basically was like, yeah, we thought we were going to have push there, so we were calling for this. And you know what? They didn't have push, because that was when Santorin came down and actually ganked off of the push that TL had, which set the Sivir way ahead of where she should have been at that point in the game. And then from that point on, TL were like running over their bot lane. So to hear that, like, that one small kind of thought was like, oh, we're going to have this, and that didn't work out, and then they kind of actually survive it out to the point where this Seraphine Senna combination is just stupid. Like, yeah, it's so hard
in team fights.
It's so hard to go up against this composition. And you saw TL, it got more and more difficult for them, even when they did have a Fed Sivir. So it was really interesting to hear that, because from 100 Thieves themselves, because like, we've been hypercritical of them, I feel, on broadcast.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with, and I know the last time I was on here, I brought up, I think it was RNG specifically, but like, they're not the only LPL team that do it. It's just the one that always pops into my head is the team that did, because previously when they had Uzi, they would give him a break. kind of in the beginning before before Chinese New Year. Mm-hmm. And 100 Thieves seem like that kind of team. Not that they're not taking the regular season seriously, but like they know that they're so good, and they also know that it is a very long season. And like, even when they're looking quote unquote shaky, they're still winning games. And it's not just this split. I remember saying the exact same things about them last split, where we're like, 100 Thieves, like looking kind of shaky, like dropped the series in lock-in to Dignitas, dropped another game to Dignitas in the regular season. And even then, they were still doing like really well.
Yeah, they in at that one point split. In spring, at one point in spring, they were 5-4, but then they ended 12-6. So they ended really well. I think it was 7-2 or 8-1 in their last nine. And this split, they were 8-1 in their last nine, which is crazy good.
It was so close. As soon as we started talking about the run,
they
lost a game and then they won the rest of them. But I mean, that's like the largest credit I can give 100 Thieves is like throughout this entire year, talking to their players on and off camera, they seemed themselves to be super comfortable with where they were at. Like they were like, we feel great. Like, talking to closer on desk, talking to Jay in an interview I did with him when I was covering for Gabby when she was doing interviews. Like a lot of it was just like talking to Someday rather in that interview, but talking to Jay before that, it was like, this team seems so comfortable with each other and so confident when everyone else is kind of nitpicking, you know, from game to game to game, which naturally a single game format is going to do that.
Yep.
But their like kind of cool headedness as a team is something that's always really impressed me because they don't seem to like overreact to much. And I think it's a strength.
Yeah. And I do want to give a little bit of context for the viewers on the laning phase today and what most teams do. This is a pregame checklist that most junglers do. Like you'll finish draft phase, and then your jungler is going to ask your lanes, do you get push? And what they mean by push is like, if I go to Scuttle Crab when it spawns, are you going to be there before the other lane? And it's a simple yes or no. And then basically if the jungler realizes they have a place where like mid and bot both have push, okay, bot scuttle is completely free. I'm going to start topside. I'm going to get bot scuttle. That guarantees me an easy early game. When that assessment is wrong and he's actually started on the wrong side and then he doesn't get crab, it actually sets him up to get double crabbed in a lot of situations because he's pathed all the way to the wrong side only to realize the other jungler can push him off crab. And then if you meted a crab and lose it, the other jungler can easily take the other one. So it's really bad to misassess a lane like that. But as you said, they did recover. And the point of what's happened in spring and summer with them, and maybe this is something, I mean, it is something that is definitely true, but I'm wondering how much we should pivot on it in like a future split. Like it's so easy to anchor on your first impression of a team. Mm-hmm. And since 100 Thieves had a pretty poor first 3 weeks of spring, and then Abadage in particular had a bad first 2 weeks of summer, it's like it took an extra long amount of time to recover to a baseline and then kind of get above water. Because looking at it holistically, this is the best regular season they've ever had and should be much more exciting going into the playoffs. And I think currently the standings are pretty accurate. Like I will be relatively surprised if it's not EG, 100 Thieves, and TL that we're seeing in Chicago. Cloud9 or COG, I think, have to make really big strides to break into that. Just like the consistency that both 100 Thieves and EG are able to put out, with EG only losing that one game to COG, the one game to 100 Thieves, and the one early game to TL, and then 2-0-ing literally everybody else on top of 100 Thieves having the somewhat weak start and basically beating everyone in the second half of the season. Both of these teams are just incredibly hard to beat in a best of five with how consistent they've been, I think.
Yeah. No, I agree. I still think it's going to be EG, 100 Thieves, and TL.
Yeah. And I mean, TL really recovered a lot of reputation in the past 2 weeks, I think. Because I spent, speaking of like anchoring, right? TL anchored themselves at the 3-0 at the start of the year, and then it took like a series of 1-1s for me to get progressively more disappointed than them. But then they started the mustache thing, won 4 games in a row, lose the game to 100 Thieves today, end up third. But aside from Closer's trash talk, which I think is Closer just being Closer, where he was just saying they always beat TL, which they kind of have in the past a little bit, it was EG that said, oh yeah, all the teams, this was inspired, of all the teams, I think TL is the best. And he actually said like the other MVP candidate should be Bjergsen, was what Inspired was saying. And then also C9 talking about how confident they were that they would like not want to play TL in the first round. Like very much not want to play TL instead of COG. And then I guess the third one is when we had Huhi doing the Proto Pro, and I asked him real quickly, like, who's going to win TL C9? He's like, oh yeah, TL. So it definitely feels a little analogous to spring, where everyone was losing scrims to EG, but they weren't winning games on stage. Kind of feels like TL is winning a lot of scrims and just wasn't putting it together on stage.
Yeah, and I think in going back and watching like a lot of TL's games, some of it is just draft, like at a certain point, unless they play out every single situation, like to a level of perfection that is very difficult with an early game draft against better scaling compositions, you're just going to end up losing out if you keep fighting over things. But like, so there's some of that, but there's then coupled with that, there was also the fact that there were a few times that maybe I should do like an actual video on this if I'm not like lazy. Or just stream my prep, which would be really boring for people, I think. But there were certain times where they would be setting up for stuff. And I'm surmising it's because these are all very experienced players, right?
Yeah.
And they do it to a level that is not necessary, especially when you're trying to snowball a composition. And so basically like in slamming all of these early games, the one thing I really wanted to see from Team Liquid is a continuation of that going forward. Like you recognize that something like a Kalista Amumu lane can actually take over the entire bot side of the map. Like you should, if you snowball that lane super well, have control over basically, effectively, both sides of the jungle and Drake for the first 15 minutes or so of the game, at least. And then you snowball that from there, right? And so I do think there were times when TL seemed to kind of slow down, go through some maybe mental checklists in terms of how we have to set things up, when they should have just been consistently slamming. Yeah. They should have just kept slamming their advantages. I don't know. Maybe this is LPL brain. You guys can call me on Reddit and call me an idiot if you want. But like that was the thing I really wanted to see from them. I think we saw it in the EG game, which was awesome to see. Like obviously, you don't want to put too much stock in one game in particular, and especially one where their opponent maybe wasn't at their best because they'd just been told that they had to play from home. But like that and their subsequent few games up until today, I was like, okay, I see them recognizing a lot more of these timing windows where they can really slam their advantages, because that's all I wanted to see. Because like Mark brought up a good point on the desk today, and we've talked about this, players have talked about this in terms of differences between scrims and stage.
Yeah.
And when you're scrimming, A, you're just going to be a lot more aggressive and proactive anyway because you're trying stuff out. You're limit testing. That's actually literally what scrims are for. They're not even necessarily for winning. Obviously, you still want to win, but like you want to practice. You want to practice doing things. And maybe the other team kind of checks out. You're in the middle of a scrim block or something, you know, like, and or you are going to be a lot more proactive automatically because you're like, we're super far ahead, we're snowballing.
Yeah.
There's not as much pressure. So I was happy, like ultimately, sorry, this is very rambly. I was happy to see flashes of that from TL this past week and last week. And I do hope that they carry that into their best of fives.
I would say, to add to your scrim point, it's not even necessarily that TL is playing more or less aggressive. It's that the team that's losing is way more willing to take massive game losing risks. Because if it doesn't work at 12 minutes, that okay, the game's over at 15, right? Or, oh, the game's over at 18. And they just go next. So that was the really interesting part about the 100 Thieves game, is like, no team would play that disciplined in a scrim when TL has that kind of early game advantage. And TL would actually just win that game. But again, it's about getting more reps on that. And it is, I really do think it is because they have five veteran players, but those five veteran players do not play the same way. And that, to me, is the biggest, if we actually take the top four, and CLG fans are going to get really mad at me right now, but the top four from the start of the split, C9, TL, EG, and 100 Thieves, the main thing to me that moves EG and 100 Thieves above TL and C9 is the difference between having five talented players and a very talented team. There's 20 talented players on those four teams. There's only two teams that work well together. And TL and C9 just still aren't at that next point. But I like your TL point. What were the time stamps, just for the viewers? Because you did a bit of a TL deep dive. Like, what were the time windows where TL has been the most strugglesome?
So when I compared all of the gold graphs, if I remember correctly, because basically what ended up happening is I did a VOD review, and then I asked one of our stats people if they could slam all of the gold graphs on top of each other so I could see the timing windows are correct. And it was between 18 and 22 minutes, and then again between 26 and 30. And today's game, interestingly enough,
between 26 and 30, they lost their lead.
Yeah, there was a small spike slightly before that, but then it was almost at 30 was when the lead change was. And the lead change timing isn't necessarily always accurate, because they might have start like in today's game, for example, against 100 Thieves, they might have already started to slowly lose out on fights. Slowly, you see how 100 Thieves' composition is going to be really strong, is getting stronger. I mean, I know this is the TL section, but like, shout out to Abadaga for some amazing Taliyah walls today in terms of like, that was part of why they were able to stall out so much, is because the way he was separating fights was so smart. But it doesn't necessarily reflect it. You could see the kind of gradual thing, but the lead change was almost exactly at 30 minutes, if I remember, from today. Yeah.
Also, if in the future you can't contact the stats team, you know Games of Legends has gold graphs that you can also like select and deselect whatever number of games you want. Yeah, yeah.
I've been trying to use our internal thing.
I know the Games of Legends gold graphs
got broken.
The Games of Legends gold graphs are amazing. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next team, CLG. The surprise team in the top four. They were projected to be much worse. I feel like they've rallied around the fact that they are not, and they've used that very well as a motivating call. Like Dokla came out at the very start of the spring and said that he thinks they can be top three. They very nearly were, finishing fourth, but somewhat of a deflating week. They were 1-2, even though they had the potential to maybe jive with TL and steal up into a higher seed, but they dropped a couple of games. How are you feeling now about CLG? And I guess it kind of depends. Like, are you considering them in this group of contenders, or are you just like, oh no, but they're the best of the rest?
So CLG have some really great things that will serve them super well in best of fives, and then they have some major opportunity areas that will not serve them well in best of fives. And you could see both on display this week. I continue to be impressed with the early windows they find for First Bloods for this team. As people know, I've been tracking the timing of it, because when I pulled a bunch of early game stats for CLG C9 mm-hmm. in week 7, I believe. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, because these are Bloody's teams. But then I was like, wait a minute, this first blood time is super early. And then you called it out on cast. You were like, wait, they're at like 328.
Yeah, as their average.
Yeah. Which is nuts. So I started tracking them, and they're so good at finding these really early windows, especially, I mean, obviously it depends on what contracts is on, but talking to him off camera, he said this on camera too, but like he really prefers playing things where he can affect his lanes early, right? So even if it is something that maybe you wouldn't think would affect lanes early, like he wants to do something with that. He really wants to be in lanes as early as possible, you know, level 2, level 3, if possible. And a lot of these CLG first blood situations are really interesting. And I like the way that they play their early game because they are always reaching, right? Like they mm-hmm. are always trying to continuously push the tempo of the game so that their opponents are kind of breathless and like can't catch up. And I think that's something that can serve you really well. I think it's something that has served them really well, especially when Palafox can find a good window to roam to sides. If he can join up with contracts or if he can just pull off a gank himself, bot or top, mm-hmm. it obviously has also served them well. And I think like if you want, we haven't even mentioned his name for most improved, but like he's actually been legitimately very good this split as a player, Palafox has.
Yeah.
And I feel like people still don't give him enough credit for how good he's been, to be quite honest.
Game today was also sick. He just, the team comp yeah. was there. He was 1-0 and we're like, okay, Palafox is going to carry this game. And then like 5 minutes later, he's 5-0.
The story behind Poom saying, I can ult you. And then him going in and yeah, just dying and was amazing. But yeah, I think that is going to serve them really well. I think their draft creativity, they have some really cool flexes between top and mid that not a lot of other teams have mm-hmm. in adding Dokla to the team, which I find super, super interesting. And now the flip side to that, so they have draft creativity, their players work well together, they're really proactive and aggressive, right? And both of those things, those two things are different things, and CLG is both of them. Mm-hmm. The other side, the TSM game was the most frustrating, I think, to watch for me. With 100 Thieves was also a very frustrating game. Obviously, I know they really would have wanted that because, again, they were in a position where they could have won that game.
Yep.
But the TSM one was the most frustrating because a lot of these catches that TSM were making were on very routine rotations that you make around the map, and TSM were just waiting to like pick them off, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are a team that might be struggling a little bit more, as I believe Chime even said this on the desk,
okay,
and also off, but I believe he said it on air too. If he didn't, he said it behind the scenes to us. Yeah. So it basically, like, when they have a comp like this, when they feel like maybe they're getting outpaced, the best thing they could think to do was kind of like set up in these routine locations, hopefully have better vision control and like catch someone out.
Yeah.
And it happened multiple times. And like if a team like TSM, who's had some struggles with like cohesion and they've had multiple roster change, you know, like if a team like TSM can do that to you, then a team like TL, e.g. 100 Thieves certainly will be able mm-hmm. to, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm bringing up those three teams is because they're the three teams above them in standing. So yeah. I think I'm, of all teams, CLG are the ones I'm most excited about to see in best of fives because I want them to prove me wrong.
Yeah. Right?
Like I really do. I hope they do.
I'm of the same mind where I really want them to succeed. It's so, I'd say like, exciting or endearing. I'm not sure which word I'm going to choose. It's a combination between the two of just like seeing CLG fans be happy because they're like, to me, some of the truest LCS fans. Because if you're a CLG fan, you're generally a fan from their glory days back in 2015, and you have stuck with it even if you're not watching every game for like 7 years. And I just love having that type of loyalty rewarded. But in the weeds of it all, there are definitely, I mean, there's a lot of red flags. I don't want to do a full preview of CLG versus Cloud9. There are red flags for both of these teams in terms of what is going to stop them from going to Worlds, which I think is going to be the goal pretty much for both of them, even if C9 might have in the back of their heads like a goal of the LCS title. The First Blood one is one that I... We're in a long-form podcast, so I can go into this a little bit more. Is less likely to work in a best of five if the team is willing to do like a deep amount of scouting and they trust the person who's doing the scouting. Because I haven't done this because we prep every team every week. But like, if someone sits down and actually tracks contracts jungle pathing for 18 games, what patterns are they going to find? Right? Because I, for instance, I did this, or I had people do this back in 2020 when I was on TL going into playoff series, where you're tracking like, okay, how many games does this player gank before crab? And some players were at like 12 of 18 and some players were at one. So that completely changes the way your laners are able to think about the game, even if generally you're just reacting. And if there is a level of cheese to what he's doing, it's not going to work over best of five series, even though it is going to work when you're just playing this team the one time as one of two opponents in the regular season. So it's, I haven't done it. I don't know if there are patterns like that, but that's one way you can punish that. And then the second way would be just like, everyone knows that Seraphine is a big pick for them. Don't get surprised by it. You're much less likely to have that happen in a best of five situation, because you can either decide to ban it from the very start, or you can find a practice opponent that is actually able to practice it against you. Not sure exactly who C9 is going to be able to book for scrims next week, but that's another possibility. So some of the things that CLG has been able to generate wins off of are possibly easier to prepare for than the things that C9 is going to generate wins off of, which is like, oh yeah, Berserker is just an animal in team fights. And like, can you outlane Jensen and Fudge? Those are just more repeatable things. So that's where I worry for CLG, even though I would freaking love it if they won that series. Like, I would love it if they won that series and moved into the winner's bracket semifinal.
It's also interesting. So the other thing I will say about CLG is we talk about like how aggressive their early game is, right? In terms of first blood time, in terms of their kills plus assists at 15 average, which is 9.2. They're actually ahead of TL at 9.1. But then TL's goal difference is almost 18K. And CLG's is all 1800. Yeah, sorry. Wow, I'm tired. 18K would be like,
yeah, they nutty. Have all
impossible.
The other team
I don't even know if that's mathematically possible, to be honest. And CLG is at 109, right? If you look at, obviously they have the highest first blood percentage, but then first turret percentage, they're tied for second at 55.6, which is a drop up of TL and EG, who are both at 77.8. Drake, they're tied for, wow, they're tied for a bunch of teams at 50%.
The Drake percentages are actually so close this year. That was the one when I was looking for stats earlier. Like, everyone is just taking like roughly half the Drakes all year long.
Yeah. And their forward percentage is still like good again, but like if you see that they're this bloody super early, right? It does mean that they can't necessarily capitalize as well on some of those first kills as maybe another team would be able to. So like, there's still room for improvement there. I don't know. I've made no secret about how much I love CLG, and I do think they're like a legitimately strong team. I think best of fives are going to be a very big test for them, though, because I think, and I'll say the same thing about C9 for different reasons, but I think it's going to be really difficult, especially after what I saw this week, for any team to crack into that top three of TL 100 Thieves and EG.
I mean, okay, what about C9? Because we don't need to necessarily answer the top four question because that's going to be something for the future. And I don't actually, I think we've done enough of the matchup preview between COG and Cloud9. I don't want to hard focus on that because we'll be doing that in the future. But more like holistically, this split for Cloud9, where the start was definitely very slow. Berserker losing his passport, getting over a week late, Zven having visa delays, and very honestly, them just having no practice time as a squad until they are already mid-split, which to me actually excuses more of their loss streak than the like, oh, we did or did not have our full roster until X amount of time. Like they in a sense got a lot of wins that I don't think would have been repeatable based on their quality of play early on in the split. So 10-8 is actually a pretty good ending based on their like average quality of play throughout the split. But they would be the team for me where the talent on the team is the most, like, it's the sum of all parts. Like the talent on this team when performing all at a high level and syncing is like a 15 win team if everything was perfect. So their chances of either pulling it together in playoffs or even dropping loser's bracket and making a run, I think are just very, very high. But they had one kind of good game today in the tiebreaker against FlyQuest, and they had two better games earlier in the week, bad game against EG today in terms of some team fighting. But yeah, a little bit of an inconsistent team, but just so much talent that I see.
Yeah, that is so the thing for C9, and I know people always hate when analysts say this because they feel like it's a cop-out, but I truly mean it when I think that their ceiling is just so massively high.
Yeah.
And I feel like we haven't even seen what this team is close to being capable of doing if all things are like working according to plan in terms of their coordination. But we haven't seen that happen, right? And that's been, I know like the podcast before their kind of disastrous week seven against CLG and 100 Thieves, the two of us were talking about like they over rely on individual outplays, but it's okay. And my side of it was, but it's okay because they're continuing to improve. And your side of it was they over rely on individual outplays and that's not good. And you ended up being right, because they had a really, really down week. And I think their drafting can be a bit inconsistent. I actually loved the composition against FlyQuest today.
It was such an outdraft.
The Zillion Yuumi comp was so good. So like, I think in a best of five, with drafts like back to back to back and you're adjusting in the moment, maybe that will suit them more and they'll be able to pivot because they do have the players to be able to make those draft adjustments. And I think we've seen we've seen some really great drafts from them and we've seen some really not good drafts from them as well. And it's been incredibly varied. And I think that variance, in addition to their trying to improve team synergy, has not served them well in single games, which is they're the other team that I'm the most curious about is like, okay, how does this translate to best of five, right? Like when you guys get to best of five and you have a whole chunk of games back to back to back, what is that drafting now going to look like when you have to make adjustments? I do think this team, and obviously like people will be thinking of that C9 team from last split where everyone was super, super hypercritical of their drafting, and in particular Summit's champion pool, once teams started to figure it out and actually started to ban those champions and really slam top lane dives constantly. I don't think there's a very simple way into like breaking apart this C9 team as there was in spring, but I also think they have not showcased the coordination necessary to yet. And again, that's where the ceiling thing comes in, because you just know how talented these players are, to be able to say definitively like, oh man, they're gonna make like a massive run. But I think of any team outside of the top three we already listed, I think C9 are the most poised to be that like shocking team just because of the talent that's available on this team, because of what I said previously. Like, my mind hasn't changed in terms of, yes, an over-reliance on outplays, but if they get together, man, it's going to look like sick.
Most likely
to be. So I
want
to see it.
Most likely to be the EG of spring would be the C9 of summer. But also, Summit, if they just keep them, Renekton's coming back in meta. Who knows what will be happening in the summer split? He was a win condition in half of their games. I think that will actually be a big point looking back, like a year from now, if this thing doesn't work, right? Of like, because that was such a hard decision Jack had to make in the offseason. Such a ridiculously hard decision. The first time we've ever had a league MVP from spring just not be on the team in summer. Like, that's how... Like, completely unprecedented. Then they lose three more games in the next split than they did in the previous split. So this playoffs, I think there's a lot of reasons this, like, has to work for the changes that they made going into summer. And we all agree that the ingredients are there. So it'll just be about seeing it. I only want to talk about one more team. I want to talk about FlyQuest, who had, like, the weirdest week. They had the weirdest week. Because if this wasn't a... end of 2022 recap and they didn't play that tiebreaker game, you know how freaking positive we'd be on them? They 3-0'd. Takui had two player of the games. They clutched out all these team fights. They moved their way up to 10-8. It was a great week, really, until they just get absolutely slammed by C9. And you're like, oh, okay, that's the difference, is kind of what we think now. And it would almost seem like it's going to take a lot for them to beat Team Liquid. But still a successful split overall, I think, so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for me for this FlyQuest team is that, weirdly, and I know you and I have talked about this on desk, I feel like their performance this summer has impressed me more than their performance in spring. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're, you know, competition-wise, I think they were going up against some stronger teams at the top as well. Or at the very least, maybe some better teams, like, dimensionally at the top.
Yeah, I mean, they did win an extra game this split as well. And I think they lost a few close ones that it felt like they were in control of. So their record could have actually been better.
Yeah, I mean, like, they definitely want that TL game back, the first one, for example. And
if
I think
they got that back, they'd actually have the same record as TL.
Yeah. Oh, wow, they would, because, TL would have
dropped
another game
off of TL.
I think they're, when they do pick for, because obviously, I think Johnson has, like, one of the highest.
The highest.
I was looking at it earlier. He has that, he still has the highest counter pick rate. Okay. They know, like, how they want to draft for these late game team fights, and I appreciate that from them as well, because I feel like they have a very clear idea of, like, the team that they want to be. I think they still, and this is kind of counterintuitive to a team that likes to have these, like, 5v5 team fighting, like, late game team fighting compositions, but I still think some of their setups are rough. Or kind of delayed around Drake and Harold. And then additionally, I think that they still really need Takoi to have a strong laning phase and Jose to have successful ganks actually across all three lanes. I was going to say either bot or top, but it could be across the entire map. For this team to kind of bridge the gap to their late game team fighting. And that doesn't always happen, right? Like, I will say it's pretty rare that I can only think of, like, one or two games where I felt like Takoi has had a really rough game. So he's usually, like, consistently good, sometimes outstanding.
Yeah.
And he's such a massive part of this team's success, I think, not just for what he can do in team fights, which is incredibly obvious, right? Because it's just his mechanical skill. But when he is able to either absorb pressure from the enemy team in mid or just have enough stability to give Jose coverage for what he wants to do, because his pathing still sometimes is not the most efficient. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important for this team, and I still see them as a like mid-jungle team, even when compositionally I feel like all people see is like the late game, Johnson is, you know, counterpicking on a hyper carry and we're going to get him in a position to succeed.
Yeah, it's the mid-jungle that gets them there the majority of the time, if it does, and their synergy together. And I do want to call out like kind of how above their weight class FlyQuest has been able to play this split, even if things don't necessarily go well for them in the playoffs. Like, they're just felt in the offseason, there just felt like there was such a massive gap between the EG, Hunter Thieves, TL, C9, and the rest. And there was like this pack of six teams. And CLG and FlyQuest have just been so head and shoulders better than TSM, Golden Guardians, Immortals, and Dignitas. Like, they're in a completely different class, even though I think the resources that these teams had to play with were very similar. So really, really well done, I would say, by the players on FlyQuest, by the staff on FlyQuest to get to this point. And if they do shock TL in a series, or if they do make it higher, it is such a difficult feat to be able to pull off. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that does have to do in like, how do these teams get there? They find value where others don't necessarily know to look. They were willing to give Jose Diodo that extra year of LCS time. There were other higher tier organizations that wanted to get Jose Diodo in their organization, but weren't willing to give him LCS right away. FlyQuest did. He got that experience. He's better this year. They look to minor leagues like the LFL, find a former MVP, bring him in, start him right away. And he's rewarding them, right? So they've just made a lot of really good bets, I feel like, both CLG and FlyQuest to get to this point, which I want to acknowledge it in this moment, because I don't know if we're going to have time to acknowledge it if they end up losing in the playoffs.
Yeah. The other big one for me is Philip, actually. Like, I know that a lot of people are going to be like hypercritical of his mistakes, right? Because he makes very obvious ones, because he's a new player, he needs experience. I know, like, you pointed out a really kind of crucial mistake in a game. Yep. Raz pointed out another one. Those are kind of things that come from experience. I know a lot of people have pointed out some problems in his laning phase, even when it looks like he's doing kind of well. Like, you know, he could be pushing his advantages more, that kind of thing. But I think overall, he's surprised me so much, because talking to a few of the coaches, and in particular one coach that worked like really, really closely with him, it was obviously a huge proponent of Philip because he believed in him, but also told me flat out, like, I don't think he's LCS ready. Mm. I think he's going to get slammed in lane a lot. I think he's really going to struggle. I do think he's a great fit for this team personality wise. And the team themselves have said that. But the thing that's impressed me the most about Philip, because I do think you can rip him apart for this like minute decision making that is just going to come from getting more reps and getting more experience and reviewing stuff like that afterwards, yeah, and being like, okay, next time I'm in this situation, I'm not going to do that. But his entry into some team fights has been weirdly good. Like, again, okay, there are some wonky ones that you can point out, but like, he's always looking for an angle. He's always looking for a play. And this is something that's been backed up by like talking to his teammates as well. And I really appreciate that, because the kind of stage that was set for Philip is that, oh, he's going to be super bad in lane. You know, he's really going to get outclassed by other LCS tops, and it's going to be a problem. I will say this, for the things you can point out in lane, I feel like it hasn't been nearly as big of a problem as it was initially sold to me.
Yep.
And then additionally, it seems like he is always trying to think about what they can do next. He is always trying to think about a proactive play. He does want to help his team. He does want to join up with his team and have these really good 5v5 fights like their compositions are designed to do. And so it's been really cool to see him come and have so much like relative success based on like what people told me about him, which was basically that, no, he's not ready. Yes, he's a great fit for the team personality and like culture wise. And we feel like, you know, by a certain point that will eclipse because we believe in his ability to improve.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, they have a lot. They have a lot more league to play. They have a best of five. If they lose that, they then get another best of five against either TSM or Golden Guardians. If they win that, they will get yet another best of five. So it's like probably 9 to 15 more games where they can continue to develop. So really still the playoffs are long and lots can change in them. But I believe that'll do it for the analysis we've done on the top six. Yep. The analysis for TSM Golden Guardians can wait. Finish in the top six next time, then we'll talk about you at the end of our recap. Any just final thoughts you'd like to add, Emily?
I think the top, I'm really happy with the top six of LCS, actually. I feel like there's something complementary and more importantly, like obviously they all have flaws. Like, yes, even EG makes mistakes and has flaws. And like you said, like, oh, if teams study like you were using an example of contracts, but like I do jungle pathing spreadsheets every week. I can tell you every team has patterns. Like there are always patterns to find, right? That's so interesting to watch when you get to best of fives. But I'm really happy with our LCS top six this summer. Like I think you have six teams that are all willing to do some interesting and creative things. And that makes me happy.
This might be the biggest win gap between 6th and 7th we've ever had.
Boof,
10-8 versus 6-12. Maybe that's part of why we feel so good about 6. We're like, you know what? These are very clearly the top 6. Like, no one's going to argue that anyone else could sneak up into there. Okay, looking forward to playoffs. That's going to be starting next week on Saturday and Sunday. Thank you once again, Emily, for joining me on JLXP. 71 episodes in the books, and I'll see everybody next time.